I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The All Smiling Faces podcast is now sponsored by TireSpot, the Northeast's leading tire supplier with branches across the region. TireSpot don't just do tires, they cover everything from servicing to wheel alignment. They can handle every aspect of your car's maintenance. For more information, visit tirespot.co.uk. Enjoy the episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Always Smiling Face podcast on the Gallagher Shots YouTube channel. For those that are watching live, you will be able to see that we have a special guest with us tonight. We have ditched Decker. We have ditched Mark.
Long time coming.
It has been a long time coming by popular demand. Mark is somewhere. We don't know where Mark is. Nah. We haven't dumped him somewhere. We just literally don't know where he is. So we are joined by Matty from the Magpie channel tonight. For those that are already commenting, yes, Mark has changed. Mark does look a lot different tonight because it is Matty. We are here to talk about all things Newcastle United, mainly about that Fulham game, which we saw on Saturday. So, boys, we're just going to dive straight into it. Bestie, we had a comment about you. Did you see the comment about you last week?
No. What was it?
It wasn't very nice.
Wasn't it? No. It's probably accurate in that case. It's probably fair.
There was a comment saying, Bestie never really likes to celebrate anything Newcastle United do.
Do you know?
That is true, though.
During the West Ham game, weekend before last.
Yeah.
I thought that myself. Because remember we watched a lot of watch-along. And it was in the Ashley days, and we watched.
It was a cup game.
It was a cup match, and I just kind of sat and that's how I celebrate. I noticed that, and then the West Ham game, the two penalties, and I'm really conscious that I was like, I was on the table, which game Blackburn in the cup, wasn't it? And I was like, after the shootout and all that.
Yeah, I find it on camera win.
I find it really hard to celebrate penalties going in. I don't know what it is. It feels like if I did it, would be performative. So it depends on the circumstances.
And you might have to do five times in a row.
Well, exactly. And there's no penalty coming for them. But the second exact penalty against West Ham, I was doing that, I was applauding, and I thought, oh no. But then the third and fourth went in, I had a jolly old time.
There was a comment that came in and said, even though how well Newcastle United do, Bestie will never celebrate or give them any credit.
I'm doing absolute cartwheels internally, honestly, it's something I've kind of pulled myself up on as well a little bit. I thought, why am I not celebrating?
So anybody that sits near Bestie at the match, next time Newcastle United score, just have a look over and see what Bestie's doing.
Depends on the circumstances. It takes a week to put it back on. It's only covered, only drenched in sweat, to be honest with you. It's horrible. It was sort of friends when Ross's leather pants get stuck on.
Yeah.
My shirt's
London. That's you in the Gallagher pods.
It is. Me and Mark at the back just. But no, I do. I'm all delirious, but I'm a very kind of measured person, I suppose.
Yeah, quite subtle in your celebrations.
I am.
Rafa style. Jimmy's need his
Rafa
glasses.
Style, yeah.
Box, straight in a pocket.
Aye. That's how we'll it's get some glasses. Give a goody. I know we can find one. But yeah, let's talk about the Fulham game. Matty, it didn't really get off to a great start. In true typical Newcastle United fashion, mm-hmm. we have managed to play three games in a week, every single one of those games completely different to the last one.
Yeah.
And the lads looked a bit knackered in that first half, struggled throughout.
Struggled would be an understatement for me, Chris. I mean, Jesus Christ, that first half was probably the worst of the season, I would say. I mean, we were getting absolutely torn apart by a Fulham team that, to be fair, is a bit of a mixed bag themselves. One week they battered Spurs, and one week they get battered off
Forest,
Sheffield United. Yeah. You know, they were 3-1 down. So their home record was very good, though. I think they took 29 out of 30 points. One of their best things about them this season has been their record at Craven Cottage, but so is ours. We've got five, six wins in a row now.
So it's the third win. Well, third win this season, against Fulham.
Clean sheets as well every game.
It's a good team to play for us, but that first half, mate, was a really painful watch, to be honest with you. We're just lucky that they didn't have the quality in the final third, because that Munez, who's one of the informed strikers, he was just passing it to the rough guy. It was twice he hit it straight at him. And it was a massive relief, obviously. And they were getting in between the lines too easy. Shaw was a bit sloppy. I thought the fullback struggled at the start. But like Bruno touched on in his post-match interview, Eddie gave him a bit of a bollocking and half time and a clear
break. Well, we do have some talking points to go through at the end of the show. People that watched Wednesday's live show last week, we'll do the same sort of format for that one. And shithousery is something which we're going to talk about, because we saw a little bit of that return against Fulham, something that's been missing for quite a while. But yes, Matty, you're right. It was a bad first half. You're quite what you're saying. The two fullback positions that got beat every single time. And credit to Fabian Shaw and Dan Byrne in his favourite position.
Centre-half? He's a centre-half? Yeah, I don't understand.
He's 100% a centre-back. Once again, that's two shows in a row where Mark hasn't been able to back-chat with that one. Because he's not a left-back.
It's an outrageous assertion that on Mark's behalf. It really is. Like, he's just not... He does play left-back quite often, but you can see it's night and day when he plays centre-half. And I don't think he's a bad left-back. I think I've got a lot of sympathy this season because Joe Linton's not there in front of him anymore. Nick Pope's not behind
him. That cover, haven't we?
And he's been playing alongside Sven Botman, who's either been injured or not that all season. So, like, he's, you know, I think there's got to be mitigation there for why teams attack Dan Byrne. But at 10.5, he was man of the match against Everton for me. And then I thought at the weekend he did really well, didn't he? Put a foot wrong. Shea, there was one point where Shea like, kind of misjudges one that goes through, and I think that won't be one of Munoz's shots.
Does it go through his legs, or he just knocked past him? Just does that one point, doesn't he?
He just seems to totally kind of miscue it, misjudge what he's trying to do. I'm thinking, watching that, if Young, etc. But if that had been Dan Byrne, right, get him off of your shite. He's got a lot of goodwill in the bank, Shea. And rightly so, because he's made the point a few times for £3.5 million.
£3.5 million. He hasn't. It's 31 appearances this season, Matty, for Fabian Shaw.
Only one. Every game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Every game in the league. He did have that one slip up, but that was it. I mean, listen, him and Byrne are looking fairly decent together at the back. Like, they complement each other well. And I think Dan Byrne, I've been seeing it for so long. Like, you don't want to get on a player's back, but he's just not the guy anymore for left back. It worked so well last season, but for now, without Joe Linton and without Nick Pope, like you said, Bestie, it was time for change. So it's good to see Lewis Hall coming in and Byrne just to go where you can see he's so much more comfortable. And I think giving him the captain's armband was such a smart choice as well by Eddie Howe. I think that's raised him a little bit more as well.
Going back to playing Fulham as well. Did he not get released by Fulham?
Yeah, he did.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah. So he's got young in them photos when he's wearing Fulham kids. Like,
yeah, it was his 150th Premier League game as well for Dan Byrne.
Oh, excellent. Well done. Well done, Dan.
Yeah,
well
so done. He had his 150th Premier League game. Bruno had his 100th game for Newcastle United.
Yes, I.
And he gets on the score sheet as well.
Did really well. Played well, I thought, as well. It was a proper Bruno game. I think I feel as though they might have mentioned that match of the day, how like influential he's been over the 100 games that he's played for. I think there's only 7 games that he's missed since he signed league games, that is, and we haven't won any of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, correlation and causation, all that, but he's a massive, especially this season when we've had Lewis Miley next to him, we've had Sean Longstaff playing. Longstaff's played more games than Newcastle have played this season, it feels like. and Bruno's kind of had to be he's the main man anyway, but the main man in the middle of the park, you know. Kind of, he was struggling a bit with Tonali to start with, and Tonali's kind of suspension. Yeah, that wasn't a thing.
A great start with Tonali against Villa.
Oh, that first game was unreal high, and then at those times, even when we had like Tonali, Joe Linton, and Bruno, where it just didn't click at that point. I'm sure it will do if we keep them all, that is. But I can't think of a player. It's hard to think of many better players that we've had. And I mean, going back the history of the club, and there's been kind of, obviously, it's recency bias might be a thing and all that. But the standard of play, consistently. And to have played, I think it's 11 or 12 games now, with the spectre of that 10th yellow card over his head, and he's still been as effective. You can see at times he kind of pulls out a little bit and he kind of checks himself a bit. But to play as well as he's played and to be as influential, to kind of do what he's been doing, and not get booked in all that time when that's such a big part of his game.
Yeah,
I think it's a testament that he's done really, really well there.
So we mentioned on because me and Deck had done a spontaneous show on Wednesday, just talking about all things Newcastle as usual. And one of the talking points, Matty, was Bruno to be future Newcastle United captain. Could that be used as some sort of bargaining chip to keep him at this club? And do you think he's got those qualities to be a captain?
I think he definitely does. I've never thought of it that way, to be honest with you. But in the summer, that could be an extra bit of leverage, couldn't it? Because you see it, who's been chucked about at the minute. I mean, we mentioned Dan Burn, and he's rose to the occasion, but to be honest with you, next season, I don't think Dan Burn will be in the starting 11. So then you look around, and obviously Trippier as well, he could get shifted out with his injuries and his ages and stuff, or a bit of rotation, so he's not going to be playing every game, basically. Mm-hmm. So it is up for grabs, in a sense. And I think whether it be next season or 12 months down the line, we probably will have a new captain in Newcastle United. And when you look at it, for me, Isak hasn't got the personality up front. You want that striker, like the good old Shearer. He hasn't. He's not that man for me. He's too quiet, isn't he?
Yeah.
Bruno has the passion, has the desire, gets it. I think he would give it a rally around people if they needed it.
Leads by example.
He can show that he can be the game changer, just like he was at Fulham. So I think it's a player that people look up to as well. So it's a good shout, giving him the armband.
I'm trying to think who else it would be.
So when we done the show on Wednesday, there was a couple of shouts for Gordon, but I can't see it. But with Bruno, I think I've never really had that thought until obviously we've had this shadow of that caution coming his way, and everybody just expect him to get the next game. As each game passes, you're thinking, actually, like, he does have the maturity there to...
Watch him get put inside.
Probably. But even if he does... He's contained himself for so long when everybody expecting him just to kick the shit out of everybody every game.
It's a shame, maybe it's Nick Pope.
But then
it's weird for goalkeeper.
Possibly back him, but I don't get the goalkeeper.
And again, with obviously all different goalkeepers this summer,
And Shea's 31, 32.
Yeah, so those two positions are probably going to get
a couple of shouts for Joe Linton. I just can't
see it. Didn't Joe Linton wear it? I was going to say that. Didn't Joe Linton wear it again?
I think he has done it at some point.
That's probably a fourth injury, and it's just been passed around probably the full team at that point.
Imagine the size of that just been on Joe Linton's arms.
It's good you don't wear it on your leg. But again, I can't look any further than Bruno for a future captain. I can't see it.
No, it's a good shout.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, if Trippier goes, it's going to be probably Tino playing right back, and Tino is another one that seemed like Gordon, who's young. Maybe a little bit of inexperience. I don't know what he's got in him that would be captaincy material. Left back would be, well, depends who comes in. Assuming it's not going to be Dan Burn, looking at
Hall.
Lewis Hall at Matt Target. Who that it just isn't for everybody. He's injured, like, but I don't know how fans him anymore. Anyway,
a couple of shouts for Tonali, but once again, it's a season that he's missed. And
I thought Tonali would be mine. I've made him my captain on my career mode,
all the Milan fans were devastated when he left, saying he
was heading in that direction, wasn't he?
Captain, wasn't he? He'd won it a couple of times, he was the vice captain, I think. So, in future, but obviously, we've got to give him a run of games first, like, see him for at least a year before we start dishing out captain armbands. But
totally discounting Miggy and Murphy.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Happening in the ring and all that.
And honestly, lads, I just like when we started talking about last Wednesday, the more I spoke about it, the more sense it made, especially to using that as trying to keep him here as well, because we know the vultures are going to be sniffing around, aren't they?
Well, if he does go, I wonder who'll get it. Lascelles is going to be club captain still, isn't he? Because he's got that year injury, 6-9 months injury, but he's got that year on his contract. Beg pardon. It kind of feels like. When Bayern was sniffing around Trippier in the Christmas window there, December window, I kind of thought, oh, well, that'll be him going in the summer. For some reason, I kind of took it as a foregone conclusion. I'm not too sure why. I jumped to that where I landed.
Because there was a few quotes that came out afterwards, and it wasn't Tripp saying he wanted to leave or anything, but he said that he would, I'm going to murder this, but something about playing in different leagues and winning in different leagues as well.
Yeah, he did really well. Did he win the Liga with Atletico?
Yes, he did.
Atleti.
Yeah, get it right. Sorry. but yeah, I'm the same as you are. I thought after the January transfer window, I thought maybe that's probably trips out the door in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And probably choices his and the clubs, to be fair.
Mm. Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, that's one of the positions that will have a bit of strength and depth. I mean, Emil Kraft's been, wasn't a wonderful few minutes from there against West Ham, but I was surprised by how, when he played against Everton, it was his first start since October last year.
Hmm.
Is that October 22 maybe?
But he came back, didn't he? He came back, then he got injured a couple of games. Yeah, just like every other player does when you're captain.
Barely featured all last season.
Yeah,
if at all, actually. So I was a little bit surprised how little he's played Kraft, because I remember he's playing quite well regularly. But obviously, I like him. I think he's kind of if Trippier goes, you've got Tino, you've got Kraft, you've got Harrison Ashby away at Swansea. Who's I don't know what kind of player he is. They seem to like him down there, but. I'm not saying that I want to get rid of him,
Chris. But you wouldn't be shocked.
I wouldn't be shocked. And if they can get back what they paid for him, maybe a little bit more, then the age he's only going to decline, you would have thought now. I mean, maybe that process has started with how he played before Christmas. I'm not saying I don't think he's a bad player at all, but he had a really, really rough run for a few weeks Christmas. Yeah.
Everything stands out, doesn't it?
God, I was just talking about that one there before earlier on there. Like, that was change the game down there. I mean, Calvert-Lewin missed loads of chances early on, but he made those two mistakes, and he played the lad on maybe Decore, I think, for their third.
The one for me was obviously I was there at Stamford Bridge, man. We're seconds away from semi final.
Yeah.
It's Middlesbrough. Do you know what I mean? And he gives that away, and that was the killer blow for me, big time.
Why don't, speaking about throwing games away, why don't we give the captaincy to Paul Dummett next season?
I feel sorry for Dummett, mate.
I don't.
Oh, I do. I like him. I think you're very harsh.
Wow. Very harsh. In what way am I harsh about Paul Dummett?
Just nasty.
Dummett Defence League, oh yeah.
Nasty. Do you know what?
PDL.
I don't think we discussed this much last week about Paul Dummett and what he did with that challenge in the box.
It was before the game, that's why.
Did it? Oh shit! I'm not, now's my chance to vent.
I'm not blessed with that level of foresight.
So Paul Dummett comes on and he's on the field of matter, mates, and just absolutely wrestles Ashley Young and to the deck.
Young it was, yeah.
Do you know what it is before that? Months before that, I thought, Paul Dummett comes on and does a job. He done it in the cup against Man City and Man United,
Sunderland as well.
Decent games there, isn't it? But then when he came out and against, was it West Ham? No, who the fuck was it?
Everton. Last week.
Of course it was Everton.
Everton was.
So when he comes on against Everton, that's the Paul Dummett I remember, where he just scared to go past the halfway line, and he can only pass the ball back. That's what I remembered Paul Dummett at. Then obviously,
I never minded him. Like when Lee Ryder would give him 7 out of 10, he got caught a little bit of abuse for that.
Maybe that's why I dislike him.
I'll generally think that's probably about fair for Paul Dummett, for Lee Ryder. But Paul Dummett, to be honest,
please not getting
I've never seen Lee play fullback before, so I can't really comment on that one. Like, but I thought Dummett was a fairly decent 6-7 out of 10 player. But that one last week against Everton last week, if there's one player you don't put your hands on in the box, it's actually Young. Like, I mean, it's what you'd expect. If Lewis Hall had done it, you'd think, like, he's inexperienced. Yeah. He's been done there. Like, but I do dumb it. I mean, he's played probably less than half an hour all season. Maybe slightly more than that.
Reason for it?
But because we've got Big Dan Burn left back. Another man playing out of position.
One of the things I do want to talk about is Newcastle United's first goal, which is ruled off. No, well, so it's a foul in the box by Burn. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about was VAR, because once again this season we've seen a lot of errors, well, what we're classing as errors as fans to not just Newcastle United but other teams as well, where VAR intervenes in a game and re-referees the game when really it's supposed to be there for clear and obvious mistakes and errors made by the referee. The referee at the weekend, he awards Newcastle the goal, Matty. Then it takes about 2 minutes for the discussion to be had in wherever they do it. Is it Stocksy Park or wherever they do it?
Jared Gillis.
Then he gets called over the monitors. It takes probably about another 6, 7, 8 replays.
Which is a complete waste of time.
Exactly. As soon as I get called over the monitor, I think we've seen it once where the referee stuck with his decision on field or twice.
Oh, I might well have done it.
I think that was last season as well. Was it last season?
Possibly.
But obviously, you get called over the monitor, you know exactly what's going to happen, mate, when they call to the monitor. So VAR, if you had the option, do you stick with it or bin it off?
I'd bin it off now. I just think, ideally, you get people in Stockley Park who actually know what they're doing, because those are the ones where they're telling them to go to the monitor. Why are they telling them to go to the monitor? For me, that does not fit in it. And then, to be fair, the referee always seems to, like we just said, make a decision at the monitor. So why can't he look back on that replay and see that it hasn't affected the goal for me at all? The ball is way over both players' heads, way over Dan Burn's head. We have Bassi the defender? Way over his head. Yeah. There is a slight nudge from Dan Burn, a bit unnecessary, but it doesn't affect it because it's way over at the top.
So Dan Burn's claimed that he was pushed slightly in the back, which then obviously pushed him as well.
All the time, though, and it's just there wasn't enough in it. It didn't affect Shaw scoring the goal.
At all.
The ball was gone. And
so the argument which they've had, and this is what they've came out and said, is not the initial contact which has happened, but it's what's happened afterwards, because of that contact, it's then put Batty, like you said, he hasn't been able to get in a position to defend the shot coming in from Fabian Shaw, because he's still on the deck at this point, trying to resort himself out. I'm not believing it. Like, I'm not believing it. I thought that was a goal all day long.
It's a really poor decision. We had on about, do you keep VAR or bin it off? Like, all the three of the games we've had in the last week were the two penalties against West Ham, which were probably 75% of them are penalties. I'm still not convinced on the second one.
He's definitely not convinced, are you?
I just don't. It's a penalty, but at the same time, it just feels like it shouldn't be. The Everton thing, they had the Isak's offside, and there's something else happened at Everton, wasn't there? I've understood the penalty. Oh, the penalty was VR thing as well. Of course.
No, there's no VR need for that.
They're both right. The Isaac thing, Isaac disallowed goal was tight. I thought it was Dan Burn disallowed goal. Isaac was offside. Was tight, but it's probably right. But then that one at the weekend against Fulham, and it's you see the time it takes is so unnecessary that I've heard a few people say stick on a timer. I think we've said it before. If it takes more than 2 minutes, then surely you can't class it as being clear and obvious. The other issue I have with it is that they look at them in slow motion, the decisions, and quite often you see a freeze frame. There was one that we were involved with. I think it was when Joe Willock had that goal disallowed against Palace last season, where they just totally.
That way he's pushed into the.
He was pushed into the goalkeeper. Yeah, where they didn't bother to look at a certain angle, which kind of made it clear as day what the situation was. Like,
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Have them looking at it in real time, maybe slow down a bit, but freeze framing, which it did for Dan Burns thing. There's one you see when he's up like that, and he's about that much taller than the centre-half, so obviously he's going to be... And it's the thing, you don't jump with your arms by your side, you jump and you kind of give yourself a bit of leverage in that. It's just not right.
You know what's poignant for me is that not one Fulham player complained.
No one did.
Nobody said, what's going on here? The Bassi, any of the keeper, none of them, they just got on with it. They just thought, that's cool, that.
I think, I've always been a bit of an advocate. I've been sympathetic towards it. But how that changed the game against Everton, because as soon as that goal was disallowed, that was where the game flipped.
Dropped.
Everton started really getting out. I mean, also as well as that, you've got Anderson starting his first game in how long. Harvey Barnes has barely played all season. He played the full game. And someone else, Lewis Hall, who went off with knee knack in the end. He had a bone in his leg. So, like, you've got all... They contributed towards the Everton thing as well. But as soon as that goal got disallowed, you could feel it. It was like the game changed at that point, and then they got the decision at the other end. But
is it also about obviously those that are monitoring these situations and making these decisions? Yes, they are referees, but we see that instance where our goal gets ruled off for a foul in the box. But then you look at the Spurs game where Madison, it's a punch, it's a slight punch, it's a half arse punch, but it is a punch. And VAR don't even step in at that point, mate.
Does that make any sense? The VAR's had an absolute stinker this weekend, to be fair. That's where you lean towards. For me, just binning it off, because it's more often wrong than not for me. And it's like this, where we're talking about all these things that it's got wrong. When do you sit here on a podcast and go, I tell you what, VAR did well that week, didn't it?
Actually,
2, 3, 4, 5 decisions, right?
Yeah.
And that never happens. And Wolves, West Ham, that could cost us at the end of the season, that West Ham getting all 3 points.
Yeah.
And then obviously cost Wolves. I think their manager, Gary O'Neill, brilliant interview afterwards, just so honest and just kicking off. He was kicked because he's been on the end of loads of dodgy
balls. Have had
this
a tough time this season.
One against us,
literally last minute the other day against West Ham, and it's just a pathetic decision again.
I just it was on Match of the Day, and I think it was Gary Lineker that said it. I mean, it's like maybe bringing an appeal process where you get one appeal per half,
like having the cricket, or the
basically, yeah, a lot of sports really. You've got the appeal process where you allow to use one per half, and if your appeal is successful, then you keep that one.
Yeah,
so it's not used.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something they can look at doing, but then will people use that to their advantage to try and waste time in certain situations? And
yeah, they pretend to keep us injured or something like that.
We're going to get onto that. But it's just, I don't know. I don't know how it can be approved. People say it's the wrong people using it, bring ex-professionals into it. But once again, just because the ex-professional doesn't mean that their opinion is going to be correct at the end of the day.
In theory, it should be perfect. But then... Football's like that. Even now, the Anthony Gordon, the second penalty against West Ham, the Calvin Phillips thing, you could still now, 10 days later, talk to 100 people and probably about 60-40. And that's having seen it time and time again, slow motion.
Well, the four of us last week, like we couldn't.
I think Mark's just quite contrarian anyway, to be honest with you. But I think even then, even with VAR, it doesn't, because things aren't always black and white, you know? So, how would you ever? And the problem is, like you said, they're like, we're sitting here talking about this podcast's go out and that's all they talk about. Match of the day on a Saturday, Sunday night, they talk about the VAR. It used to be the talk about the referees being shite, now it's about VAR, and it's like, this was meant to get rid of that. Instead, it's become a whole, a whole item of discourse on its own. And I am now leaning towards bin it off or use it differently. Like, maybe your review system would be a good way to do it.
Well, there's been a couple of comments here, maybe just use it for the likes of offsides and things like that. Which isn't,
because offside is black and white in it, generally speaking.
You would think so, but once again, there's still been decisions that we've looked and thought, is it offside?
Well,
his arm's offside. He can't score a goal with your arm.
The t-shirt line and all that, and where does it start? It used to be any part of the body that you could score a goal with. I don't know if that's still the case or not, but it's not perfect. I've seen people saying, well, make it so there's got to be daylight between the striker and the defender, but all they're doing there is moving the problem body's width that way, and you're still going to be drawing lines on a pitch to try and work out whether two boots overlap or whether an arm overlaps. You know, it hasn't fixed anything.
Exactly. It was brought in, you thought it was going to make things better.
Yeah.
Has it though? Not for me. Like,
I don't think it has now.
The one time it does come back to the people that are using it for me though, really, because remember how good it was in the World Cup? It was class in the World Cup. You don't really hear as much like kickoffs in like Liga and stuff. For me, it's got to be the people that are using it really. Like, but at the end of the day, it's just, it hasn't improved. I don't think it's had the impact we thought it would have. Really,
what I've done this afternoon, because I've had the day off, and I thought I'm going to listen to a couple of reactions from Fulham fans just to see what their opinion is on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to one podcast, and I'll not say the name, but the question was asked to them, saying, as Fulham fans, if it was the other way around, would you be annoyed?
Yeah.
So if it was the other way around, where they score the goal and gets this rule off, and they all start going, well, it's obviously a foul. It's definitely a foul. Like, they've done the correct decision to take and scratch that goal off, but I'd be annoyed if it was the other way around. So I was like, well, you can't like have your cake and eat it. You can't say it's a foul and it's a correct decision and say, but I'd still be pissed off if it was taken off us.
Well, that's kind of what Gary O'Neill did, wasn't it? Gary O'Neill was going at the worst decision.
Let out
the
law, wasn't he?
And in the end, he said, that's probably right. It's the law's not right, but the decision's, you know, it's in line, it's consistent with what the law is. So it's one of those ones, isn't it? Gary O'Neill, he's one of those ones, isn't he?
I think it just goes down to the point once again. If it's enough like that, the referee's made an absolute howl at me, then yes, step in. But like I said at the very start, it's just the more we see it, the more it's just getting used to change the game completely.
Yeah, it is, because like I pointed out, no one made a fuss of it getting checked. No one's arguing. Everyone's just ready to restart the game. There, 1-0, let's go. But when you have everyone in your ear, it's got to be hard for the refs and all, to be fair. Now, all this, we've seen the videos back now, haven't we? This season, they've been showing clips of, especially the Newcastle Arsenal one, where obviously the Arsenal fans are kicking off the Joelinton push and Gordon scoring.
And they're still kicking off about it,
man. Oh, they are. They'll win you that. If they don't win the league, that'll be why, apparently. But the push in the back and all the shouting in his ear and then running over, and you've got 50,000 people screaming. It's not obviously not easy, but
does it not just take one of them to just have a pair of balls and just go over the mark and go, well, I got it right?
Aye. You should have been easier going. I don't know what you're saying, but I've seen it in real time. I've seen it back on this 7 times.
I don't even look at them.
they shouldn't have players around the referee. I don't understand why. After all, remember watching Man U years and years ago, 20 years ago here, and like you had Roy Keane chasing the referee across the pitch, and just a load of red shirts behind him. Like, well, just make it so you can't come within so far the referee. And if you do, you're booked.
Yeah.
Like, let the referee the game.
So, yeah, Jurgen Klopp's so bad for it. Oh, yesterday,
yeah, he's
the
fourth terrible,
official. Man. Every time some little things get thrown, he'd be shouting the fourth official's face, and the fourth official's looking away from him, not even acknowledging him. He's basically screaming at thin air. And Jurgen Klopp, and to be fair, I'm so glad that he was not like that. Like,
do you know the whole thing with the fourth? And I've only just recently started thinking about this, is why does the fourth official need to be there? Like, on the sideline? Could that just be somewhere else in the stadium?
All he needs is just for the board, isn't it? That's how it comes on, does.
Yeah, and even then he could put that on the big
him there?
No. Nice job, like.
Because then, exactly, but then it just gives those managers that sort of interaction with them an opportunity to do that. Just don't put them there.
There's always had, though. I mean, I remember Graham Taylor in Rotterdam in 1992, 93, having a go at that. You just tell the referees, cost me my job, and all. Tell your mate, it's cost me my job. And all that. So they've always had that. It's kind of, I don't know if it's to make sure that, imagine setting Jason Tindall loose on. You know, you've got to have a referee almost there, like an umpire almost, just to say that, lads, don't bring him.
Like one of those false bodyguards where they're stood there, but really that other person isn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
You have to see that loads in football, don't you? Right, let's move on. Next talking point is going to be, like I said earlier, the dark arts returning. We saw it, Matty. And we talked about this, Bessie, a couple of weeks ago, about how Nick Pope was great at doing this. We used to just fake an injury, go down for a little bit, then the lads would go and regroup with Eddie Howe. We saw it perfectly at the weekend. The Fulham podcast that I was listening to weren't happy about it, saying it was a form of cheating to get a one tactical tactically up on the opposition, which kind of correct what we're saying. There was no goalkeeper warming up. He's done that on purpose.
Marco Silva could have just got his head in and said, like...
Exactly. There's nothing stopping them doing it. There's nothing saying we can't do it. Yes, you probably are wasting time, but wasting time so you can regroup, not so you can run the clock down as such. Fulham were tails were up at that point, mate. And Eddie Howe, we saw him. And you don't normally see him get animated on the touchline, and he was going wild at some of them. Bruno's done an interview afterwards with some Brazilian TV or radio station, whatever it is, baby. And Bruno's basically saying Eddie Howe went to town and saying that they weren't fast enough. They weren't the Newcastle United that everybody knows that they are. He's got every right to do it, hasn't he? And it's good to see that return.
It is. I thought, nowadays, I like that from Bruno where they were trying to big him up for his goal and stuff. And he literally said, oh, it's down to Eddie Howe. This room is down to him because he transformed us at half time. He literally did give them the kick up the arse that they needed. And the dark arts thing, Ten Hag did it yesterday. I seen they did it twice. Oh, Manu Garnacho goes down twice. When the 2-1 up and there's no doubt the matter with them. So it's not like we're the only ones that are doing it as much as social media or other fans might want to let you know, like, oh, it's Eddie Howe, it's this dark arts and all that. It's clever, to be fair, and there's nothing stopping everyone else doing
and
it.
And the style got wheeled out that says the ball has been in play this amount of time when Newcastle United are playing a game. I think that was after the game against Liverpool where the lads got booed off the field.
That's, weren't they?
They loved that style that time.
But it's smart for me and it's needed because why not take advantage of it? It shows how bad that performance was in the first 20, 30 minutes that he had to do that. Mm-hmm. And then it did kind of give us a bit of a swing because I think Gordon put one just wide a few minutes after he had that talk with him. So it makes sense to do that, to be fair. Like, it's smart. Mm-hmm. Why would you not take advantage of it?
Well, something that I remember watching a thing a while ago now and John Terry was talking about it. Might be another cost, something like that. And he was saying that something that Mourinho used to pull him in to tell him. I think you know what I'm going to say here, Chris. But I'm still going to say it. John Terry would say, Mourinho would say, if you're going to go down 2 years, go down in the box, two defenders, because the referee can't, you know, you've got to go off for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
The referee can't make both of you go off. So you stop the game and there's no like penalty for it almost. Mm. Obviously, it's the same for goalkeepers. If a goalkeeper goes down injured, the referee can't say, right, that's it, you're off for a minute, you know, because it's ridiculous. So that's obviously, like you say, the Nick Pope thing, I forget which home game it was that season, but I remember watching him going over to Tindall and talking to him. And a minute later, he was down and everyone was in. And it was abundantly clear if you'd seen that what was going on. Like, and it's here on Saturday that they do the cutaways that Karius and Gillespie sitting on the in that they've got a Game Boys out.
Hilarious.
And
Pokemon Red,
no interest whatsoever.
Honestly, it was good to see it. And I think, Matty, we've missed it so much this season. The Newcastle last season, it felt as if we had a bit of a chip on our shoulder and we just wanted to be a bit of a dick in the Premier League. We wanted to prove a point, saying, well, we've had so many restrictions placed in our way and so many hurdles, and the team on the field done the talking forward really, and they were arseholes. We took nobody's prisoner. Absolute arseholes of some teams, and I absolutely loved it. That just completely dropped off this season.
And you could see the negative effect of that. You want to be hard to play against. You want to be these players that are in the tunnel before the game. They didn't want to be going out and playing shit houses like Joe Linton and that, and getting stuck in. A lot of these players that you win the game before you even go out. Sometimes I think that was the case when Eddie Howe first came over, when we played Arsenal and we beat them 2-1, wasn't the gold star and everything, the blue star and all that kind of thing just has such an impact, man. And like you mentioned Chelsea, Jose Mourinho, no one wanted to play Chelsea's Jose. He didn't want to come up against Drogba and Terry and McAlealy and that. These players were ruthless and they were dicks, and that's how we've got to win, especially in the Premier League, because when we're trying to come up, we're obviously not going to be as technically as good as your Arsenal and your Man City's not yet.
Yeah.
So you find a way to beat them.
It's the whole thing about not here to be popular, which I believe was what Eddie Howe said last season.
Yeah, it was a banner that which was.
Yeah, I thought I remember that.
Get, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly it. You don't win games by being popular, and you're going to upset people, just that's the nature of the sport, you know. I mentioned Ashley Young earlier, like you don't put your hands on him in a box because you know what's going to happen. He's made a really good career out of not just doing it, he's been a good player as well, don't get us wrong, but that's the packet ad, does it? We've got Anthony Gordon, does it? Hits a dead nice knee, like those two penalties.
Yeah.
The first penalty that he got against West Ham was like Harry Kane, where he's seen Kufal's run and just made sure he's in the way. He's gone out of his way to get in his way, just and that's it. White mouth penalty. Bruno does it. Bruno wins so many free kicks. I think he might be the Bruno most fouled player in the
way all the time.
All the time. And that's not, and that is to a certain degree down in the dark arts. I mean, it's not exactly the darkest of arts, but it's like it's dark grey.
Yeah. Off white.
It is. Aye. It's a duck egg.
why was we're talking about Bruno there, Matty? Great to see him on the score sheet. Like I said, it was his 100th game for the club. And he deserved that goal, honey.
Oh, he does. He's been due one, to be fair, like, hasn't he? I can't remember the last time he scored.
Been a while.
Been ages, yeah. But because I put you see the stats as well, isn't it? From the 100 games, I think it was 14 goals, 13 assists. And some people are saying, oh, that's not amazing. Like, I'm like, well, you're totally missing the point of what Bruno Guimarães brings to Newcastle. Yeah, if you're thinking that 14 goals isn't enough, because we doesn't need to do the goal scoring as much, really. Mm. But it's nice to see him pop up on the edge of the box, because what I love, everything comes out of Bruno when he scores in the celebration, the dodgy knee slides, I swear to God,
the amount of injuries that we've had, obviously, we were picking up another one earlier in the game with Willa going off in, what, the 30th minute or something daft like that? Bruno then attempts a knee slide on the driest part of the field.
Bounces.
In the sun. Bounced.
His knees went about 2 foot into that turf, man. Like, you think that happened, Bruno, you fucking idiot. What are you doing?
It's just easy celebration. We don't even run at the corner flag. You don't even sprint, nothing. But he deserves that goal. He deserves the moment. And it was nice that everything was then made around him, because, again, it gave us the opportunity to ask him about his future. And he's obviously going to say the right things and that. But 100 games for the two, and hopefully it's 1,000 more for me, like, because he's just something else, man.
He's spectacular, man. He is. And like I said, obviously, we spoke about possible captaincy coming his way. I think all behind that. It just, there's just something about him which, yes, we knew we had a great player on our hands, Bessie. We knew that from day one. But he's grown into a different sort of player now. Like, he truly is a special player.
He's unreal. It's hard to kind of, I remember before we signed him, the mark was buzzing him. Oh, Bruno Guimarães. I thought, like, is he that good? There's been a lot of hype and a lot of noise.
He meant that left back.
To be fair, he was dropping in the centre back a bit against Fulham when Shaw just decided to make them bombing runs like he does for absolutely any reason with 2 minutes to go. Fucking hell.
I say, it's really hard to. He kind of plays number 8. He plays number 6. He's such a good passer of the ball. He seems intent at the minute to use the outside of his boot all the time.
It was highlighted of match of the day, wasn't it?
I can't remember. I can't remember.
He'd done a couple of passes. They didn't solely focus on the outside of the boot, but they showed two passes that he's done that. One of them was over to Isaac.
I was going to say, I remember that live.
He just miscontrolled it. It was a great ball, but then you're just passing through the eye of a needle throughout that game against Fulham.
Well, the ball he plays, because he starts off the move for the goal, or he's certainly involved early on.
He is, yeah.
And he zips it into Elliot Anderson. And it's like a shot almost. Mm. And Anderson takes lovely touch, gets out of Barnes. And there's a thing for the weekend. I know we're talking about Bruno, but the difference that Harvey Barnes made when he came on, putting Gordon out right, that was just so much. And I said a few weeks ago on here, like, I don't think you're going to get the best out of Gordon on the right-hand side necessarily. I mean, the Shadislav goal came from a Gordon cross. But I think Gordon, if you've got, say, Barnes left, Gordon on the right, and he's out in the front, you're far better than Murphy or Miggy on the right. Or, you know, that's my opinion. Like, but Bruno, I bet he's wonderful to play football with.
Must be, your kids coming every day.
Enthusiastic, like, he's a fertile man. But I bet I Lewis Miley playing with it, he's only going to be improving Lewis Miley by playing with him. I remember a while ago reading about Phil Foden at Man City, and they haven't let him go out on loan because they said, well, he can stay here and train with
better experience with
De Bruyne. He can play with Sergio Aguero. He can play with, I mean, Jack Grealish a bit later on. Like, but why would we send him off on loan to, like, I don't know, Charlton or something like that off the top of my head? And he's just going to kind of get the shit kicked up every week. And I think the same for Miley. I'd rather see him stay here. And if you've got, like, the likes of Bruno Guimarães, it was just infectious as well. And I still think, I mean, even a full time when he was saying, I read a thing where he said that he'd, he was saying to the crowd, like, no, like, you're singing my name, but it's not really about me. He's quite humble. Mm. And I bet he loves it the full time, because it doesn't matter. We could be beating 6-0 at St. James's. And when they do the lap at the end, it's still Bruno, I got to get to the end. Like, so I love him, mate. Like, I kind of have a feeling that he might be winning somewhere, but the same as Matt, I hope he never leaves.
You mentioned there, Budden being like, he's played as the 6, he's played as the 8. Where do you reckon his best position is? And do you reckon he can find that balance next year with Tonali and Julian, if that is the midfield 3, or would you go out, everyone in January is like, we need to sign a 6, we need a DM. We didn't have one last year, and we finished 4th. Yeah. What's your thoughts?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because when Tonali came, I think statistically, and this isn't a very flattering comparison, the way things have gone this season, he was more the kind of player that like Sean Longstaff's replacement, because that's apparently how Tonali, I think, because Tonali's got a side partner in the beard, everyone goes, oh, it's Gattuso. Enoch Gattuso, big pardon, Pirlo, yeah. Pirlo. Where he said himself, I'm more like Gattuso, like a bit more kind of, he tries to play the balls and all that, like, but he's more of a grafter and a kind of a ball winner, maybe. So with that in mind, I would probably be minded, saying mind all the time, to play Bruno a bit further forward.
I think it's something which has been screaming out for. I think you get the best out. Bruno's a great midfielder, and that just shows his quality, that he can play anywhere across that midfield, Matty. But I think when we've seen him further up, he creates goals, he's scoring goals. Exactly. He came to the club and said that he's not known for scoring goals, but then his first season here, he's banging them in.
On his debut, he scores a fucking unbelievable
thing. All that back heel thing.
He looks like he doesn't score goals.
It's like I'm CC back. Just banging them in. You're thinking, actually, maybe you are better up further up the field. And I fully believe the further up the field the A is, the better.
I think you've got to get the most out of his technical ability, mate.
I think he causes more problems. He can find passes, he can find space, he holds the ball really well. He sometimes wants a bit too much time on the ball for me. He kind of gets caught out a lot in the centre circle.
Yeah.
Move that 25 yards up the pitch, you've got even less time. But he does think quickly, and he can shift the ball himself. He's not like a dribbler where he's going to take four or five blocks on. But he can control the ball long enough under pressure that he can get a pass away.
We're talking about winning free kicks in the centre of the field, like you just said. Further up the field, then you've got a dead ball specialist in, whoever may be, Trippier, if he's here next season, that put him in a great position from there as well.
Exactly. Fabian Schär just put his laces.
Fabian, I just smashed at it.
But I remember his debut, it was in the corner, right? In fact, it had been right in front of you when he back-heeled it through someone's legs.
Yeah.
I was like, hang on a sec, who's this?
Yeah.
And then he dribbled it out of our six-yard box at one point as well. What's happened?
I can't remember his debut.
When Trippier scored that free kick, was that game? Season before last, sorry, but 2 years now, isn't it?
What was that you said?
His debut.
Southampton
away, wasn't it? When he came off the bench.
I've got it in my head, it was Everton at home when he came off the bench.
Blue top, he scored that.
Somebody
scored
in the comment will tell me.
It was definitely his first goal forward, but I've got it in my head.
Might not be his debut.
Because there was one where he had the ball, like, I'm sure it was in our box, and he's just like dribbling. And I thought, like, no, man, that's not what you're doing.
Don't do that, yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
The fans will soon
turn. Maybe that'll fly in France. Like,
but Eddie deserves credit there, doesn't he? Because he did obviously bet him in, didn't he? Everyone, we spent 40 million on this club. Haven't seen a player. Took 8 games or something, but it wasn't worth the treat.
Especially in the relegation battles, we were at a time. We were a long way away from being safe during that period. And to have a player of that much quality and just go, like, now we're going to sit on him. And then, I mean, we were winning games, so I suppose that helps as well. Like,
Longstaff was playing unreal at the time, wasn't he?
And that's one thing, you know, I mean, I was like kind of joking about Longstaff a little bit earlier on there. When you've got Bruno, Longstaff's work rate. I was having a conversation at work today and I was saying Longstaff, like, he doesn't really tackle. He doesn't pass a great deal, but he's always where he should be.
Longstaff. He just fills the space
He fills the space. I think he's always a man to beat. So if they break it, you can guarantee Sean Longstaff's going to be there or thereabouts. He always makes that run either way where he scored against PSG. We had that run kind of at the channel.
He's always
in there. And he's just always where he's meant to be. And I think he's very well coached. He's a good listener. But it's the technical side of it. I think that's what's let him down. He's injured as well.
He's having a tough time.
I still like Sean Longstaff. Like, I hope he's got a future at the club and all that. Like, you know, I wouldn't kind of just write him off. But I think he does need a rest. Like,
yeah. But for who? Now that Willock's injured again.
Oh, no.
Well, it's a Willock thing. Is that a recurrence of whatever he had prior to that, or is it because he got that tap on the Achilles?
I think Eddie Howe said after the game, he still hasn't actually fully recovered from the initial groin injury that he had after the other injury. So
he doesn't look as though he has. I think he's been out of form.
Everyone was saying when he's back, oh yes, he has. We've missed his energy so much. We haven't seen any energy. He hasn't got it. He's still clearly struggling. Like,
but he's played like Old Trafford in the cup in October or something. He's got it in him.
We're on a decent run of form now, bestie.
Yes, 7 points out of 9.
A lot of people were saying that just a few weeks back, that end the season now, the season's completely over.
I say whenever we concede. I say, I'm finished.
Just pin it off. Pin it off Europe.
Get the Euros on. Get the Euros on the telly.
Bestie, we're still fighting for it.
Of course we are. I saw, was it Toon Pools on Twitter earlier saying, I was asking him yesterday, the tweet where he was saying he's looking at Villa's running, and I was thinking we can get fifth. And I was looking at that thinking, he's right.
Are fumbling in it. Like,
they've got a really bad running.
They've
got a rough running. Villa, like, they're still in Europe. They've got, I think, Lille.
They've done well, though, to get
where they've done brilliantly. No, I'm not writing Villa off on it by any stretch. They've got 13 points behind them with the game in hand at the minute, but they've got, like, a lot of bad games to come. Whereas the thing is, we don't on paper have as many. We've got Man U and Tottenham left. But the rest of it are games that you think...
Aye.
I mean, Newcastle being Newcastle, we've done it time and time again this season where we have shot ourselves in the foot. Last week, it's not going to be plain sailing.
Exactly.
Thanks, Dominic.
So we are eighth because we're probably the eighth best team in the country at the minute. Or we've been the eighth. You know what? We're not in a false position. I don't think we should be better. I think last season was such an achievement. Mm. But there again, I was looking, I forget which game it was now, a week or two ago before this run of games, we were 13 points less than we were last season by the same point out of 29 games. If we had those 13 points, we'd be sixth this season. So we benefited last season massively from Liverpool being out of sorts. Obviously, Chelsea are this season as well. Like, but we were the main beneficiaries of what happened last season around with. Mm. But I was looking at the fixtures thinking, well, there's no one, I'm not scared of Man U. I think they are so hot and cold that they are going to drop plenty more points. West Ham, I think, will as well. They're still in Europe as well, West Ham. Mm-hmm. Wolves are starting to kind of
not for long, like,
look a bit dodgy.
I think they'll go buy Leverkusen on Thursday.
I think, well, there's three that we can, I fancy we'll get ahead of those three. That puts me into sixth. Tottenham are going to finish fourth, I've got no doubt. Mm-hmm. Their run-in's better than Villa's run-ins. Honestly, it's rubbish. They've got like Harlem Globetrotters, they've got Brazil, they've got everything. They've got the aliens at Independence Day and all that. They've got a really shit run-in Villa. Like, it's such a collapse on them because they are a really good side themselves. Like, you know, the fourth or fifth of the season again on merit because they are a really good team. But well, we've shown you can get at them if you can play them like that because they play such a high line. A bit of pace and get around the back of them, you can cause them bother. I haven't seen them losing some more games.
I would absolutely love it, man. Kevin Keegan style, if we managed to finish above Man U, man. We're only two points off them.
Aye.
After the season we've had, the injury crisis, the Tonali, everything else is absolutely mental.
So this is going to be my next question, which is put in our WhatsApp group earlier, Bestie, was last season versus this season, which has been the better season? Considering everything that's happened, like, which is the most, if you're looking at success other than what you're getting at the end of it, obviously Champions League football, yes, that was fantastic, get that, but considering that what's happened this season with injuries, Matty, and with the suspension to Tonali, which has been the most successful, isn't the word that I'm looking for,
I know what you mean,
but somebody explain that better. You think Champions League
more impressive. I would say, and I would say this year, if you managed to get six with everything that's went on, I'd say that's more impressive because of the last year, obviously, was unbelievable and amazing, but it was one game a week. It was Tottenham, Chelsea, everyone had fell off a little bit, Liverpool. Whereas this year, the Premier League's been unbelievable, really. You've seen like, the closest titles we've had in forever.
Yeah,
the relegation battle's so tight. Even now, the sixth till ninth is still really... So if we managed to get Europa League with... What the amount of injuries we've had, the days that's been missed, the Tonali stuff, the insane cup draws, the group of death in the Champions League, Eddie Howe, I think, unbelievable achievement if we get it. And I'd probably maybe just about say it was more impressive because it's probably harder with everything he's had through Adam.
I think it's a question which there's no right or wrong answer, Bestie, because if you're looking at his success as in getting Champions League football the first time in 20 years, whatever it was, then yes, that wins all day. But it was only a few months ago I was sat here and think maybe the owners are looking at this and thinking, Eddie Howe's time to go, really, because you're only as good as your last game, really. Mm-hmm. But Eddie Howe has proved that he's fought through such a crisis that we've had and we're still in the mix for European football. That is mental.
There's been some really weird stuff. I've seen people saying that Eddie Howe's got no plan B, and yet we've had more goals scored from the bench than anyone else in the league.
Mm-hmm, we have.
Which those two things are kind of... Again, correlation, they're mutually exclusive to one another, surely. Eddie Howe's got I give him a 10-year contract now. I love him. I think this season, it's weird because I remember sitting in here, either back end last season, start of this season, saying that it's probably going to be harder, but unlikely to finish in the Champions League spots again. Mm-hmm. Finish ahead of Villa will be mine. Fifth, probably do it this year.
I think we'd done a collective video at the start of the season and put our predictions where we're finishing the season. And I think a lot were around about five, six, seven, around about that.
Six or seven.
And the shit that we got in the comments.
Do we really? Oh, I never read them.
Loads.
That's a good attitude to have.
YouTube's an awful place.
It's so negative and stuff like that. Well, obviously, we'll just understand what the plan is going ahead because we've got a big challenge on my hand. We didn't realise about the injuries. So.
Well, you can never predict that. But I said seventh, but also said we're in the cup. I said we would learn from our mistakes the final last year, and this year we'll be ready for it. To be fair, we mentioned the Trippier mistake earlier.
Yeah.
You're in a semi against Middlesbrough. We'll win that, and then we're in the final. So, you know, we're not that far off, and the Champions League, dodgy decision costs were there as well. So,
which goes back to the conversation about VAR.
Exactly, aye.
Yes, of course, I hadn't even thought of that.
So that's situated big time, but honestly, man, in the season not done, listen, there's what, seven games left, it's probably still twists and turns, but if we could go to Man U, beat them, with, I think they took 1 point this week in three games, we took seven, so the turnaround could be huge, and if we can get 6 points above them, that would be absolutely unbelievable.
If you look at the last week as a whole, getting, what, 7 points out of nine?
And if we had a home run against Everton, we'd be above. We'd be in six now.
Yeah, we'll be. And everyone else dropped points as well. Obviously, West Ham did against us. Wolves did against West Ham. Man U got 1 point out of the three games, was it? You just said there. Every team around would drop points. Chelsea's starting to look a little bit, but then they drew.
Then they drew Sheffield United.
Mike says he's right. There's a long way to go yet. Like seven or eight games, 21, 24 points to play for. It's a lot of football. We could still win the league, by the way. But 24.
That one tweet has made you do that.
Well, 24. Honestly,
look at Man City, he's running you now.
Well, 24 points off top. So if and Man U and Man City and Liverpool or Arsenal don't play each other, so they could theoretically lose all their games. We win them all. There it is, boys.
What do you say about that Man U Liverpool game the other day? What did you want to happen?
Oh, a draw and for a points deduction for both sides. For the domain, like it's one of those. It was the ultimate. Can both teams lose, please? Because Liverpool, I don't want Klopp to win anything else ever. And Man U, just because it's us, that's where we are, and we've never finished above Man U in the Premier League.
And now that's what was devastating last year. Now we let it slip right at the end. Mm-hmm. We went third for a majority, weren't we? And then they were, and I was giving it the big. There's only one United now in the league, and all that. And then they came and snatched it. So this year,
you to blame, I won't.
So I haven't said that this season yet. Until just now. But hopefully, man, I'll be unreal if we do that. Like,
if anybody does have any questions, send them through as quick as you can, and we'll go through them for the last 10 minutes. We've got one from Liam Knowles already. That's his. He has a question. He says, "Magic wand, which one player would you pick to get back fully fit to get us over the line for Europe?"
He's given
Trips, Big Joe, Wilson, Pope, or Tonali. We're scratching the Tonali one off because we know that's not that one. Well, to be fair, we know quite a few of these aren't happening. There's no mention of Botman in there either, to be fair. But the one that I'm going to go for is Big Joe May. Like,
I was going to say the same. Aye. Yeah, I'm going to say the same. Especially now with, obviously, we know Willock's not up to speed. We know Longstaff's been getting steroid injections for the past 6 months. So we desperately need that midfielder. And again, that would help us out defensively. It would free up Bruno a little bit more to be more forward, further forward, and just give with that injection at midfield that we need. So I'd go Joe Linton. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Trips and all at the same time, to be honest, like, because of the fullback situation we've got at the minute. But I think Joe could impact games a bit more. Like, and imagine which had him for the last seven games.
Same bestie?
Big Joe, maybe it's Pope as well. I think Nick Pope's been a massive miss. And I remember at the time thinking that he wouldn't be, because I've always quite liked Dubravka. I think Dubravka's a good stopper. When we play with a deeper defensive line, it doesn't really expose his kind of lack of adventure, shall we say. Mm. The fact that he does kind of stick his line. I think he's a great starter. He should probably save Calvert. It was plenty last week, to be honest with you. Mm. But he gets a good hand in it. And it's Calvert. I can't stand him. He's a wanker. But,
Hi, Calvin.
But, well, when we sign him, I love him. Like, but
40 million apparently asking for you.
Really?
Jesus Christ! What if we need an injury-prone striker? Nathan Wilson with a Calvert-Lewin. It's just a younger Wilson.
It's got to be Joe Linton. We've missed him so much this season, like massively. When he came back, that spell before Christmas, he wasn't really fit. Scored that, like, the best goal I've ever seen, probably against Milan in the Champions League, which he thumps it. And again, about this season being more impressive than last season, with half an hour to go in the sixth game of the Champions League, we were second. Mm-hmm. We were going through that group, and we were kind of... So it's been one of those seasons where little things gone against us. Matty says that the Trippier thing at Chelsea, where we were League Cup semi-finalists, probably League Cup finalists at the end of that. Oh, yeah. I think we'd have beaten Borough with two legs. Even though Carrick's got, he's doing well with them. But yeah, Joe Linton, a fully fit Joe Linton is like, he's such a big part of what we've been since Kieran Clark got sent off against Norwich.
Well, going back to the start of the podcast where you're talking about shit house, you, Chris, and getting that back, he's the epitome of that, isn't he? He's the foundation of that, so it would be unreal.
Joe Linton, but as long as we can wipe all his yellow cards off as well, because he's probably on the verge of a ban as well.
He's not doing a Bruno either, he's not lasting that.
Definitely not. But then there was rumours last week that obviously the contract situation that we know about Joe Linton, but apparently that had been resolved. That's what the rumours were last week, that Joe has signed a new deal. Obviously, we're still waiting to hear the news if that is true or not. But it just shows you that the ambition of the club going forward, Matty, doesn't it?
I think you're saying it. I think you're saying it. I think you'll stay.
The reason why I think that, Matty, is that I don't, and I might just be biased and with me black and white specs on here. Joe Linton doesn't get the same love at any other football club that he definitely goes to not. With what he gets here.
No, definitely not.
It's been such a redemption story from here. I'll give anyone probably far too long to prove themselves. And even I was thinking, just get 10 million from him and sell him. The start of that season before the takeover. And then what's happened since?
Like, cut your losses.
There's not another player like him in the Premier League.
No, far from it.
There's not. There's not been many players. I'm not saying he's as good as Yaya Toure was, but that's probably the closest. As far as attributes go, I mean, Yaya Toure was an incredible player.
Great.
But he does a job defensively. He can score goals. Weirdly, he's better. I trust him more from 25 yards out than I do from 5 yards out. Jordan, which kind of like anomaly. But I love him. I think he's a fantastic. I remember the game at Hillsborough last season in the FA Cup. Obviously, it was a catastrophe. But he was the one who was picking the ball up 20 yards from our goal and just driving forward with the ball. And the whole game was going with him. And that's what Sheffield Wednesday. But that's the kind of player he is. I would really, really miss that.
What was the game where he absolutely smashed it in the back of the net? Like from about half a yard out?
I don't remember.
It was this season. He was about half a yard out and he just
Matthew James's. It was a
Gallagher.
Was it Bear Bournemouth or Brentford? Someone like that?
I can't remember. Honestly, there's no need for him to hit the ball.
We scored two goals in a couple of minutes, wasn't it? Yeah. And we won the ball really hard. Yeah, there's just no need for it.
That can go wrong, that though. Chris Wood tried to do that yesterday. Smashed it in the knee for it.
That's a Chris Wood we remember, isn't it?
It is. But Joe Linton, it is unreal to see the owners as well, obviously, showing that ambition to get him tied up. And that's going to hopefully help keep the likes of Bruno here as well. Because if you lose a Joe Linton, or you kind of tie him down, and you can't offer him that money, then everyone else look around the dressing room and think, I'm not going to have long that year. I can't get an extra 20 grand. Thing. So he fully deserves it, man. He's probably the player that deserves a new contract out of anyone.
It was a Chelsea game where he smashed it. Let's see if we've got any more comments coming in. This one is from Mike Focus. There was one from Scott, our very own Gallagher shot Scott.
Is he still saying that the Pravka going down is as bad as Ben White?
No, we're not getting on that. He got enough grief in the WhatsApp group.
Good, he just it was outrageous. Show that
it was ridiculous.
By the way, we're calming the league, but we only got 7 games left.
Oh, what?
We're safe though. We can't go down.
Dreams are crushed now.
Next season.
Scott had put a question in about selling the players and keeping players. We're not going down that route because we're keeping them all, Scott. Right, we're keeping them all. He's trying to make us sacrifice players. We're not doing that.
I just feel really sad for the players that leave before the Adidas kit comes in.
We'll never feel bad for them.
Yeah, because I look back at the Grandad Collar kit that was the Les Fernand Ginola. They stayed those two seasons, and that's perfect because they didn't kind of get tarnished by the Dalglish like the malaise that happened in '97. And either or they'll be the Castor team,
right?
There was when the with like the badges stitching upside down and Steve's falling off.
Into the Castor
The training kit with like the badge peeling off it and that. I mean, we're all sitting here in Castor.
So I know. We're endorsing it. Like.
And I actually own all three. There's a team photo from the. And I'm totally off piste here, for which I apologize, Chris. A team photo from the spring or summer '95 when the Adidas kit was first. And there's a lineup, and it's kind of I keep doing that. I keep on this. I'm going to film this watch either. And the lineup kind of goes away from the camera, and you've got like Barry Venison, who didn't really wear that kit. Malcolm Allen's in it. I don't know. He bought a great deal of someone else. Bracewell. I think Paul Bracewell's in the picture as well. Actually, he might not be. No, I think he is. And it's like Mike Cooper in the Predator kit, top thing. It's like, that's a bit of a shame for them, that because I've got at least. I hope they've got to just keep one.
Take one home. It's going to be good, like any. He's been here. He's been with the Puma, the Castors, everything.
He'll still be, mate.
He's been here.
He will now after the injuries, actually. Yeah,
he's pom-pom.
Right, through the Wonga years. Paul Dummett scored on the day I got married, so I think that might be why I've got a bit of a.
Actually, Dummett's probably already seen Adidas. He's been here that fucking long. Yeah, in the relegation. He's 2009.
He's
banana kit.
The book kit in 78.
He could be. The next question is from Mike Farkas. That says, what's been our goal of the season? His was the one which you mentioned earlier.
Joe Linton in the Champions League.
Milan.
Great hit that, like.
It was Milan, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the first Champions League goal I scored since Stuart Pearce free kick against Gale.
Mine is going to be another Champions League goal. It's Fabian, the PSG.
That's hard to beat that one.
That was incredible. I know I said it because I had COVID, so I missed the game. I remember saying it at the time that He had the bit in the Green Mile when he sucks the cans out that lass and he just goes, when Shea scored, that happened to me. The COVID just went, fuck this, I'm off.
Me hold the queue up a code, right?
Fabian. My horse. You can see lights going on over the road and that. Like, that's all right. I still felt shite the next day. Like, wasn't
happy, but, aye, Fabian, me, like,
I love that goal. You could see what was going to happen as soon as he got the ball back off. I think it was Murphy. You can see, like, Shea's hitting this.
I just, do you know what it is? Like, it's such, I just love Fabian's celebration as well. That little twist of the finger. I just love it. Love it.
There's a picture of it from the goal from behind Donnarumma. In it, you've got like the whole of the Milburn and the Leasers, and you can just see him in full stretch. The ball's on its way, and it's a proper Champions League picture. It looks amazing. Mm. It's like the best in James Park's ever looked.
There's a great shot of me and Mark as well, because the TNT cameras were just focused on me and Mark at that point, and like I'm just absolutely gobsmacked, and like I'm just still like that.
I'd have texted off my dad. I said, I can't get away from him. Can't escape him.
Got COVID, they're still showing up on the telly. What's yours, Matty? Same.
I was trying to think back. Obviously, Isak's scored a canny few, hasn't he? I think. Who else is it? We'll stick with Shaw.
There's a couple of shouts. Callum Lewis says Dan Burns, Champions League goal against PSG.
The scrappiest goal ever scored. I know.
Brew Rhythm Boy says Bruno at Forest. What was a good goal? There's been some great goals this season, cool. And a hell of a lot of goal scorers as well.
Two against Man City, Gordon, and he's that both goals. Really Gordon,
the amount of times he's kind of done the same goal, but it's so effective, just cutting in and putting it bottom corner.
Weirdly, we scored 8 against Sheffield United, and they're all kind of shite.
Even the Tonali goal, you know, the build up and everything they won against Villa.
Yeah, the first goal of the season.
Such a good goal, that as well.
He's actually at Sunderland, partly because it was Sunderland, but the fact that
every single one of them,
he hits the ball on his left foot, he's got way he puts it to aim for. It's perfect. No touch. One touchback, pardon. In you go. They are. That's a lot.
Yeah. I think the majority of people are going with Fabian Mind.
That's PSG. Fair enough. Like, what are the goals? Longstaff, Burn, or Miggy when Donnarumma spills it. Fair enough. That's a big choice. It's such a clean hit against Milan.
Mm. Sean Sona, say Isak sitting down Martinez in the first game of the season. He goes round. Gordon's v Chef United was meant.
Any shout out to Hobby? Just about to say there. That's a great hit.
Great against, finish.
But like, he finesses it in, but like 100 miles an hour. It's a great hit, that.
Take my power shot on FIFA, that. So that is.
It's good to almost a header.
Any comments from you two before we wrap this one up? You just want to touch on anything?
I can't think of anything, though.
This is where everybody goes quiet.
I can't think about it. I just want to kind of clarify that, you know, when he said we don't know where Mark is. That doesn't mean he's missing. It just means that he's
putting reports.
Where is he? It concerned in that, like, he's around.
Would you take a point against Spurs now?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah, probably.
Because I was having this argument with someone the day where just I said that, they were like, nah, we're at home, we've got to beat them, and I was like, well, they are fourth in the league, you know, and like, this is, like you said, obviously, that and Brighton's the only hardest game left for me now, because I think we'll beat Man U.
Yeah.
So
I think you keep the form, you keep the momentum going, and just keep on pushing for that. Like,
aye.
I think so. Just try and stay tight at their back. They'll cause a bother because they're scoring goals at a minute. They looked great at points yesterday.
They're notoriously slow starters though in games as well.
Yeah.
So that's going to play in our advantage, and they are wide open at the back. Like the amount of chances Forest had, they should have been 2-3.
We haven't been starting them very quick either.
Honestly, I think this could be another West Ham scenario. This like a 2-2-3-3 something.
Yeah, it's just I don't want another basketball game. I'm sick of basketball games at St. James Park.
Not going to be good for your blood pressure. This
just
one's Chris
back and forwards.
Sit it out. It's going to be the same.
I'm sending my dad. I can't go. Like, my dad's going. Like,
you're not going.
No, I've got the paint football thing. Like,
all right, okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be another roller coaster.
I'm sick of them. I'm sick of these games where you just don't know what's happening.
We'll get the Euros and we'll be playing some nice defensive stuff against Denmark. And that
boring as hell. 1-0 win.
This is more like it's better. This is more like
2-0 win against Slovakia.
Keep that on the bench. We don't need him. It's too exciting.
It will be a game where where Salah are donating the front of the shirts as well.
Is that this? I thought that was the preseason.
I think
it's this one.
Yeah,
all right.
I think it is.
Hasn't been announced what charity it is yet.
No, it hasn't. But I'm sure there's a couple of comments in saying that obviously there will be not a blank shirt, but
yeah,
there will be a sponsor on the front of the shirt.
Oh, I'd assume that was the game of play in Australia. All right. There we are. How about that?
So I'm sure that'll be news this week. I'm sure the club will do some sort of build up with that one as well. Nice. What do you think it'll be, bestie? Saudi company or local company?
Saudi charity. Absolutely astonished.
I think it'll be local, like.
I think it's local, like.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope it is, like. Aye.
It's us. Fine Mark on the front of the shirt.
Any UFC fans against sports washing?
I get them one, get them one. Thanks everybody who has been watching live. It's been a pleasure as always. Thank you, Matty, for joining us pleasure, tonight, mate. As well. Bestie.
Cheers, mate. Enough to thought there, but I'll take it.
As usual, if you're watching live, just like the video. If you're watching back, do the same. Become a subscriber. It costs you nothing to do that. If you don't want extra, just become a member. It's $2.99 a month. You get early access to videos. You get extra videos. And you get access to the Telegram group as well, which is always busy in there. And you do get access to the Mark versus Decker videos earlier than everyone else. So that's the video for Mark versus Decker this week as well. It is Decker just out and about trying to find Mark
in Paris.
just trying to find him in Paris. We'll send Mark to Paris.
Disneyland.
That might be a video like that. That'll
that's
be
a great idea. Entertaining. That, like, the best part is Mark's not, you don't even send Mark. It's just like Home Alone, you know what I mean? McCully Culkin in Paris.
He's just got Mark shouting at kids.
And thanks, everybody.
Bugs Bunny's better than Mickey Mouse.
Is that your actual opinion?
No, no. Well, oh, it is. Okay. Of course, it's Bugs Bunny's hilarious.
All right, okay. thanks, everybody. See you later. Ciao.
Podcast Network.